Joe Ito, I don't know anybody who plays this game of digital information with whole, just posses of readers and commentators in Japan, in Africa, in Europe, in the States, and with big ideas about the implications for young people, for culture, for democracy, than you do. And you do it at 30,000 feet a lot of the time. What are you seeing up there?
Well, I haven't been excited like this since I was 23, and I was just getting into the internet. And I think that a lot of things are coming together. There's a whole bunch of positive things going on in the midst of all this chaos, sort of globally at every level. And there are a lot of tools in the wake of the bubble burst. And there are these tool builders who are in their teens and their 20s hacking together code that actually works. And so at every level, from a technical level all the way up to a social level, everything seems to be converging on this point of trying to make something good happen. And what you're seeing, I think, not just on my blog, but on a lot of other blogs, is you're seeing old technology, like 20-year-old chat technology, finally coming together. And so it's not just new technology. It's a lot about taking old technology and actually getting it to work. And then the other layer, which is the penetration, has in social circles, people who didn't use computers before, and also mobile phones and other things getting into the developing nations that are bringing people online who've never been online before. So, so I think, you know, this is kind of cliche, but everyone over anticipates and over expects the impact, short-term impact of technology, but everybody underestimates long-term impact of technology. So this is, I think, the real thing happening after everybody sort of got a little too excited and we're back to reality now, which is actually a good reality.
Less changes in 2 years, more changes in 10 years than we ever expect.
Exactly.
Okay, but let's break that down. Are you talking about an explosion in numbers of people using this stuff, or of effects that we haven't really noticed yet from what's going on even now?
Well, so from a technology perspective, you know, everything is about timing. So I was talking to the former, well, at a conference, the former chairman of Pepsi was explaining how he was trying for years to get kids to carry around their drinks in bottles with a screw top, and he could never get it to happen. Then suddenly everybody's doing it. And I think the thing is that technology has to come together with a behavior change, but behavior change isn't necessarily something you can cause to happen. And so a lot of technologies that are around or have been around, it's about the tipping point, it's about timing. And I think there's something happening right now that has a lot to do with timing. And statistically, I think, for instance, you know, I've been running InfoSeek, which still exists in Japan, for 8 years or 7 years or something like that. And we did a survey, the Ministry of Post recently did a survey, and 2 years ago, only 30% of the people who use the internet use search. And this year, 70% use search. So people think search is an old technology. Google obviously has helped search become more popular, but the fact is that in 2 years, we've gone from 30% to 70% of the people looking for things on the net using search engines. So search engines have finally come, you know, to the masses. And so I think, you know, a lot of this technology, even though it's been around and all the early adopters have been using it, I mean, to use another cliche term, it's really finally crossing the chasm. And the other part of it is, I think, with the blogging tools and things like that, you know, we thought that just having home pages would make everything democratic and flat. We realize now that you have a lot of other things to create, you know, links and links back and all sorts of extra features in order that you have to create to make web publishing a communication tool versus just a flat publication tool. And again, these new technologies are just getting finished, you know. So we're not yet mature. We're not even alpha yet.
Okay, but can I ask you the sort of the big essay question that bugs me every day? We're talking about democratic technology that's cheap, that's everywhere, that's global. We're talking about democratic energy in a context, though, in which 50, 60, 70% of the American people think Saddam Hussein knocked down the Twin Towers, of confrontation, warfare, alienation, to me a kind of racist recolonizing, re-imperializing drive in the world. In other words, a huge collision of goals and intentions and effects. What are the real effects of blogging culture and blogging technology going to be on the real world?
Well, I think there are several different things that blogs do, I think, that are really important. So,
do you take my general question about this kind of collision of big pictures?
Yeah. So in my paper, basically, what this about I'm calling it emergent democracy. But I think that one of the problems with the world is that democracy, the American founding fathers thought of, didn't anticipate a couple of different things: the scale of the issues, the complexity of the issues, and the power that these large organizations would have. And I think that there's currently a kind of breakdown in democracy in that it's more like billiard balls bouncing off of each other rather than something that's a deliberative process where you can come to some sort of consensus. And I think a lot of the problems right now is that, you know, people who used to be physically separated and wouldn't ever dream of being in conflict with each other are forced to be in conflict with each other, and we're unable to communicate. So I think that, you know, we do need to try to augment what we have now as a sort of global democratic process. And if you break it down into several components, I think one component is the deliberation component, which the media is a big part of. And I think that the current form of mass media, which is about sound bites and about, you know, one-liners and short speeches, you will never get people to a level of understanding to be able to have some kind of common understanding with that method. I think the other thing has to do with then causing action. So one is sort of discussing, and then the second phase is action. And both of those things can be enabled and supported by tools on the internet. And so just to take one part of it, which is the issue, which is, you know, mass media is overextended with resources. There are things going on all over the world, and they can't cover everything. You know, they can't cover Trent Lott. They can't cover the Congo. There are so many different things, and also they're a commercial enterprise, so they have to sell what people are willing to buy, and there's this fine line beyond which they won't go.
How does the new electronic individual, sometimes blogging technology, cut through some of that?
So I think that, you know, there's several layers of bloggers, but the great thing about bloggers is that there are so many of people around the world who are intensely excited about something very specific, and because they're not, it's not a commercial enterprise. You know, you can find, for instance, we have bloggers in Baghdad, we have, you know, Persian bloggers, we have bloggers all over the place.
Lots of them.
And the thing is, they will continue to blog in their communities, but the moment that an issue in that area suddenly becomes important on a global scale, we'll have some experts and first sources in that. And then what the second layer is a social circle of bloggers that read, you know, groups of blogs, so people who are generally interested in Africa. So, for instance, if an event happens in Africa, and this is sort of the future, I think, if something is about to happen in Africa, there should be a way for a bunch of bloggers to be able to say, okay, these are the authoritative sources that we know in Africa, and here's a summary that we can understand. And this information should percolate up to what is closer to the mass media. And in a good example in the past is the Trent Lott thing, I think, which is, you know, the mass media dropped it. The bloggers continue to focus on it and find more and more information until it was pushed back into the mass media and caused some change.
I love this idea. I mean, I call it my idea, that we have a technology now, say for covering the Congo or knowing about Eastern Europe or China for that matter, that's better than the New York Times, vastly better than the networks are ever going to give us, if only we could gather the neural networks of their own communication in English, but introduce them to the global network of people who are interested. But are we getting there fast enough?
Again, I think that, you know, we need to make sure that we don't overestimate the short-term impact. I think that it's going to take a while for people in the Congo to actually be using computers, and it may actually be cell phones that will be the first way to get access to those people and those sources.
Speak about the Congo. I mean, that ongoing war in a huge and hugely significant country at the heart of Africa. How does the electronic technology relate?
Well, I think, you know, there was a negative example, which was the Nigerian riots during the beauty pageant, right? And so people short messaged each other, and then suddenly there was a mob and a riot. So obviously people are using short instant messages on phones. And I could see that, for instance, and there's audio blogging. So a lot of reporters are now using cell phones to audio blog. But you could easily see somebody with a cell phone with a tool where they could, you know, they see something terrible, they take a picture with it with a cell phone, they annotate it with audio, and they attach a title with a short message and send it off to somebody. And then another blogger picks that up and creates some context around it, and then that makes it up into the news much more quickly than and in more detail than a TV crew could get there. And then eventually I think that will turn into video. But I think that the key to blogging, part of it, is that there's just so many endpoints, so many people are enabled. And so I think the trick is to have several authoritative sources in those regions so that we know, and so they can sort it out and add the commentary. But at the endpoints, they should be able to collect content from anyone. So somebody sees something on the street, somebody sees a policeman beating somebody up. I think recently there was a, I'm trying to remember exactly, I think it was in the Philippines, but some video was taken of some people being, I think, assassinated. I mean, there's some corruption was shown and by video, and mm-hmm. it wasn't necessarily blogs, but it was amateur, video taken up, and then finally those corrupt politicians were, cracked down on. It's not just about blogs. I think it's a low cost, video taking, audio taking, editing, and then transmission technology, together with what the blogs do, will help us sort out the signal to noise thing. Because I think you want to make sure that the content that comes through is clear, that it's fact checked, that you have professional, debunker blogs who go and try to debunk everything to make sure that and it's rigorous. And I think the key is, instead of focusing on a domain expert, which is the traditional way that the government and the mass media do, I think the idea that what we're trying to say is, no, if 10,000 people in that region have read it and commented and it has survived the rigor of, and this is kind of the open source, has survived the rigor of public scrutiny, it's probably close to the truth. And it's a different way of doing it, I think.
This is the Rodney King effect you're talking about that has become the Trent Lott effect writ large.
Mm-hmm.
Take a deep breath. Who is Joichi Ito? And how did you get to be this kind of East-West guru of the new communications?
Well, I spent most of my youth bouncing back and forth between U.S. and Japan. So I was born in Japan, moved to Canada and the U.S. when I was two, went back to Japan for junior high, went to U.S. for college, dropped out, being a DJ in Chicago, moved to Hawaii, moved all over the place. And I've always been going through a continuous identity crisis. And what you realize in being, and I think, I don't want to compare myself to Colin Powell, but one of the reasons that I respect Colin Powell so much is he's been through so many cultures and seen things from so many perspectives that he understands, for instance, that there is no absolute truth. And one of the things that's really developed my character in the way that I am and the way that I link to things is that I'm continuously trying to find other people who have a different point of view that I don't understand. So, I called up Reverend Akuma yesterday and said, okay, so tell me about this God thing, because I didn't understand it, and I'm always trying to confuse
myself.
He's a blogger too. He's a great blogger, and he's a good friend. And I recently posted this item saying, this whole thing about having one God and my God's better than your God seems to be the problem with you people, because I'm a Shinto and I believe that there are many gods, and so you can put your God right there next to mine. I don't mind, and I'm not going to assert that any one of the gods are better than the others. And so I posed this question about the one God thing, and he posted a response, and I didn't really understand it, so I engaged him. But one of the things that I'm always actively doing is looking for people with different opinions and trying to engage and understand them. And what the result is Grant Andover's paper, The Strength of Weak Ties, which is the story that you have strong ties, which are your close family and friends, and then weak ties are people who sort of are relationships that are in other networks. And he was talking about surveys, for instance, in job finding, where most people found jobs through weak ties, not strong ties. And so The Strength of Weak Ties is a paper talking about the importance of having ties into other communities. And that's really what I thrive on, and what my blogging is all about, and what my traveling is all about, and what my work is all about, is trying to connect to people in as many different communities and many different levels as possible, and trying to add value by linking these things together. And from a business perspective, there's what you would call an arbitrage opportunity, because usually information in one community is very valuable in another community. But I think the key point, though, is that most communities won't open up to you until they feel that you understand things from their perspective. So, for instance, most Japanese think that I'm very Japanese, and they trust me to be Japanese, they trust me to be patriotic. But when I'm speaking to an American, I think most Americans can feel that I understand how they feel as well. And I think the key is to be able to sort of feel the way people feel when they're trying to talk to you. And again, sort of to make the religion back to this the Shinto thing, which is, if you feel that you can believe in multiple gods, or in Japanese, for instance, you have a variety of pronouns for the word I, and each one gives you a different sense. And so it's kind of like having multiple identities. And And so I don't know if I'm getting too esoteric.
No.
But
I get it.
But I think that so another way to phrase it is I think I'm trying to become a global citizen. And to be a global citizen means that you do need to have your roots, where I have a grave with 16 generations, and I'm going to end up being another blip in a long history of people in Japan. But at the same time, I'm trying to really understand at a meta level what sort of we the globe are about.